Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. Well, you know, today is my first day back from 3 weeks in Portugal. I am rested and ready to go. Today is sort of a last-minute idea because we feared I would be hampered by jet lag, which is not the case until about 10 minutes ago. And so I will get energized by our guest, I am sure. I'm so happy that our dear friend Rance Berry was available to have a discussion on a subject that is very dear to both of us. And basically, putting it frankly, it's all about how to optimize old age before you reach old age. In the 2020s, I have seemed to feel or discover that we have an entirely different concept of old age than we did 50 years ago. 50 years ago, I think 60 was considered old and 70 was certainly old. Today, that is not the case. In fact, I'm not even sure what we consider to be old age nowadays, certainly not before 80. In 2 months, I'll be 73, and I feel, literally, Rand, I feel at least 20 years younger. In fact, I'm in what I consider to be the most golden years of my life. I call these my autumn years, which I will explain later in the show. So what I want to do is bring you on and talking about making the most of the years that matter most. So, Rance Berry, welcome back to the next chapter with Charlie.
Well, thank you, Charlie. It's good to be back.
It's good to hear your voice. You know, it's been, from talking a couple times a month to not having talked because we will hear about your adventures and that your travels. We've not had a chance to chat much, so this is our chance to catch up, and lots of people get to hear inside information about us. Now, Rand, before we get into the meat of the show of talking about these years that matter, I think our listeners need to know a bit more about you personally. So first, without taking the whole show, tell me about your family, your awesome wife, Rosemary, your six kids, your whack of grandkids. Tell me about the Sperry family with you as godfather.
Well, yep, it is true. We have, Rosemary and I have six children, ages turning 30 and turning 40. So it's about a 10-year spread with twins. So we had Brian 2 years later, almost to the day. We had Christy, and then a year and a half later we had Kevin and Katie, and then there was a pause for 4 years, and we had Michelle, and then 2 years later we had Kelly. And my wife said, well, once we have the fifth kid has to have a friend to play with. So that's how we ended up with the sixth child. But as you can tell, doing the math, we had four kids in 3.5 years. So it was a busy time, but it was a fun time. And
now, was that a time in your business? Yeah. Was your business busy at that time as well?
When we had the kids,
or, when you had that, you know, in that 4 year span?
Well, Michelle was born in 1990, so the answer is yes. In 1987. I started Sperry Van Ness with a gentleman named Mark Van Ness, and it's a commercial real estate brokerage firm. And we wanted to grow. We weren't looking at just having one office. So we started, by the time the number five child was born, we already had three offices. And so I was pretty busy with four kids and opening an office every year. And so it was very active and very busy. And then we had number five and number six, and we opened up two more offices during that period. So we had six offices and six kids. opened up one more before the year 2000 when we decided to franchise the company. And when we did that, we hired a gentleman to come in and help us grow the company. And we did it all through internal cash, and we didn't have any other partners, and we grew it to about close to 1,100 brokers in 38 states. And I think we had about 187 offices before I sold out to Mark Van Ness on that particular entity.
And how long had you been in business to do that? That doesn't sound like you were in business that long to get 1,100 offices.
Well, we did that in 6 years. We had seven of our own, and then through franchising, we opened up the other 180. And so that was a busy time as well. But as we grew that, I was able to have more staff and more staff. And before you know it, we had 100 people working in the Irvine office, just involved in that. And meanwhile, in 1998, Mark and I opened up Sperry Equities. In Sperry Equities, we brought in Burton Young to be a partner and a gentleman named Jack Carroll. And we started acquiring real estate, not just in California, but eventually in nine different states. And so we were doing that in tandem with running the brokerage operation and with raising six kids. So
you know, I know I had, you're sort of the at that time you were sort of the general partner. What experience in leadership did you have that you could grow something that rapidly and that effectively to generate the kind of income that your company generates? Did you have leadership experience? Are you degreed in college in that? Or is that something that is just a Sperry trait and you figured it out as you went along?
I didn't mention the 10 years prior to 1987. I started in 1977. And those were my learning years and leadership years. And I went from being just a broker, and he had six offices. It was called the Haynes Company. And I was one individual, and I started performing really well. And I liked the leadership idea and the leadership role. And so as the turnover happened in our office, I raised my hand and said, I can run the office. I can mentor people. I could recruit. I could do those things after about 3 years of being there. And so he said, okay, we'll give you a shot at it. And that went so well that 2 years later, he asked me to run the entire company. So I had, in my sixth year out of the 10th year, I had 4 or 5 years there where I was running all the offices and I had managers, and I didn't own it. The Sky Bruce Haynes owned it, but I was the general manager of it. So that, and I learned from him. You know, he was about 15 years older than me, but he had terrible people skills, and that's why eventually I had to leave and go out on my own, because I wanted to grow his company for him, but people were leaving left and right because he just didn't know how to handle people.
Yeah, and you are off the chart with people skills. You really do such a fabulous job with people, and at the same time, you know, you run a strict and disciplined organization that you don't just you're not everybody's best friend. That the people are there to perform a task,
right.
and but they need to be treated like humans. You know, I must commend you on that. You know, I want to go back just a step, and I want to go back to your kids, because I know a bit about your kids and your in-laws, outlaws, whatever we call them, and that you have a very successful family. You know, you have a son that's highly successful real estate broker. Isn't he a broker? A real estate broker. You have a
residential,
and you have a huge clothing outfit that started from nothing. You have an event planner who is
the planner to the billionaires, I call her, because she has had 3 or 4 billionaire clients, but she does high-end wedding events.
And she doesn't do it anymore, is that right?
No, she's still doing it.
Is she?
And chooses, yeah, because she's got two children, and so she doesn't want to work so much. And her husband's very successful wealth management type of guy, and he does very well. So she doesn't have to work, but she enjoys doing it, and she wants to keep her finger in it, but it's certainly not full-time. Her kids are a priority, which is nice. And my oldest son, he's also one of the top brokers in Newport Beach, and he's got the same kind of personality. Everyone loves him. Anybody I bump into, they say, "I just love your son, Brian."
You must be so proud, Rand.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all the kids are doing well in their professions, and their spouses, they picked well. Their spouses are smart and energetic and want to keep going up the ladder of success. And meanwhile, they've seen the example that we do focus on family time a lot. And some of them aren't as used to it or weren't when they married in, but they are now.
They are now.
It's hard to get all the attention when you're one of 12, because that's really what it is now. We got six kids and basically six spouses. So
I want to catch in and talk about that a bit, but I do want to say that I think it's important for our listeners to know that you also have very successful children, and that you have a couple of pretty famous people, especially after the last couple of weeks. Can you want to talk about Kelly and Miles?
Yeah, sure. Miles Teller is married to my daughter Kelly, and Miles just finished, well, he finished it a few years ago, but the movie Top Gun just came out, and it's just blowing through all expectations. It's the number one grossing film of 2022, but I think it's going to be for the last decade at least. And he plays Rooster, which is Goose's son in the movie. So
it's Goose's son. I didn't know that. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's about repairing that relationship because, you know, there's thoughts that because Maverick was such a maverick that his dad died because he was not being being safe. He took a lot of chances.
Yeah, wasn't prudent. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, you know, people should have seen it by now, darn it, or otherwise it's a spoiler alert. But the other issue was that Maverick promised, what's her name? Oh, my God. Goose's wife, Megan. Oh, my God, I'm losing her name. But anyway, Goose's wife, Rooster, would never fly in a plane. And she didn't want him following the same footpath as her husband. And so he pulled his papers when he was in the Air Force Academy, and it cost Rooster like 4 years. So he was mad about that as well. So there was a lot to repair there in their relationship. And throughout the movie, they're adverse to each other. And, you know, obviously at some point it turns. And that's all I'll say. And it really, you know, I hear people, they cry towards the end of the movie when they see what happens. And also Maverick has a love interest, Jennifer Kelly. He finally, after all these years, because he really stayed a captain that entire time, finds a love interest, a permanent love interest.
Don't tell me the whole movie, because I haven't seen it yet. Oh. I just got back from Portugal. Okay. But my wife saw it, and I've got to tell you that all the family she was with, they said Miles was perfectly cast, and that he did an incredible job. They said Miles was just off the chart, that he was really great in that show. So congratulations. Yeah. Give my love to Kelly and Miles. And
well, just for the readership's or the listeners' background, spent a week with Kelly when they got engaged. Miles and Kelly got engaged, and of course Kelly came on that trip to Uganda, and so your listeners know that you actually know Kelly pretty well.
Yeah, Kelly and I.
You've seen her without makeup on.
I saw her without makeup on, and Kelly and I, there was something about us that clicked, and you know, just that 1 week, our personalities, where we had a really fun time together. She's such a delightful young woman, and we knew some of the same people from when she went to high school, and so it was a nice relationship.
Right.
I've got an off-the-wall question, and then we're going to go talking about age. But I have an off-the-wall question for you. Are you ready? No, I can't even ask you if you're ready because you're not. we've covered your life in some detail, you know, in a bit. I would like you to tell me and our audience, tell me one thing that very, very few people know about Ransberry.
Thanks. I won't fly first class. I do live beneath my lifestyle. I'll call it frugal. So I just remember one time we had an event at the St. Regis at Monarch Beach, and we had 1,000. Well, we had about 600 or 700 of our brokers, and then their spouses. So 1,000 people. It was a 3-day event. We had a beautiful lunch on the lawn every day. We had a formal dinner on Saturday and gave out the awards for the year. And I mean, it was quite a glamorous event. And we did that every year. And my daughter Katie met one of the brokers, and so he asked her out. And he came over to the house, and he goes, and I could tell he was shell shocked that it's not an average house, but I think he expected me to live in a 12,000 foot mansion on the water. And so I think
it's a lovely house. It's people. Just it's a very comfortable and very inviting home. Rosemary's done a wonderful job making that a home.
Yeah, it is, and we love it. And it's got a lot of entertainment between the pool and the outdoor kitchen and the basketball court and the putting green.
You mean the pool that's as big as a pool that's at a hotel?
But, you know, I remember when we were growing the company, we at the end we'd do our sales pitch to a group of people. This one was in Atlanta. And then we'd get one or two or three of these guys to sign up as franchisees. And they said, well, yeah, you know, I said, well, we got to go. He says, do you have your private plane? And I said, private plane? I said, no, I think we came on Southwest. And, you know, it always pays to be honest, because there's the MARTA system, I believe it's called, in Atlanta. It's a, you know, not a subway, it's above ground rail system. And we get on the rail system, and there, the guy who asked me if I had a private plane was in the same car we were in. It's a good thing I'm not saying, oh, you know, I got a limo coming to pick us up, and, you know, we're going to take our airplane, you know, just to make him sound, make it sound like I'm this big, successful guy, which, you know, I was, but I just don't do that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, thought, I know.
I was so happy I didn't exaggerate how we got there.
How many times have I teased you about you're the only man I know that owns a Rolls Royce and flies coach? That just, and then the friends that I told that to said, well, how do you think he affords a Rolls Royce? He doesn't.
Yeah. Well, you know, Charlie, I love to travel, and my kids have been to over 55 countries, along with Rosemary and I, and 32 states. And we stay in nice hotels. And over the years, I think about it, and it would have really impeded our travel if we flew first class at the time. And I'm only 5'8", so it's not like I really need lots of leg room. Take a sleeping pill, and we go to sleep, and, you know.
I know. It makes sense.
Up when we land.
I know.
So, however, my kids have not learned that lesson, by the way.
Thank goodness. I know. I know Kelly hasn't.
Yeah, no. Yeah, Kelly came home one day and said, she said, you know, I don't understand why anybody flies other than first class. That's the only way to travel, Mom. Like, she discovered something that we didn't know. I'm like, well, yeah, the studio isn't paying for it. So, and if they're going to pay for it, I'm happy to go first class. And we have a few times I've had to speak in China. I was invited over there twice, actually, and went first class. And then they bumped us one time on a European trip, and they bumped the entire family. And so on the next trip, part of the negotiations was flying first class. So the entire family flew first class up in that bubble area.
Yeah.
So we really had the whole top part of the plane to ourselves, and that was very cool. And,
yeah, that's very cool
experience. But it's not an everyday thing, and I think a lot of people that know me would be surprised to hear that.
Well, I think we've got quite a bit on Ransberry. That's good. That's I think because you've been on the show enough that we've really not focused on that. Now let's get on to our subject that I think is very important, and this is regarding old age and so-called retirement. I know that you are younger than me, but not by much, but I am still your elder. So I want to ask you, do you feel old?
Absolutely not. It's frustrating because when I look in the mirror, I realize I'm old. And, you know, even my dad told me that himself. He goes, you know, when I look out, I see a young me, but when I look in the mirror, I realize I'm old, but I don't feel old, and because he was healthy up until he died. But you made a point about 50 years ago, how different things were, and I was going to comment, well, both my grandfathers on both sides died in their, 57 and 58 years old. So that's when they died. So you're right about the fact that, you know, there's probably a 20-year psychological and even maybe medical edge that we have on our grandparents. And so and I mean, mine are proof of the pudding. I know there's a lot of people that have lived into their 90s, but that wasn't the case in my family. So I try very hard. In fact, I was at the nutritionist today, or basically it's an MD who follows all my labs and gives me non-prescription type drugs, herbal type medicine and stuff.
Do you dare tell people how many herbal medications you take daily? Do you dare tell that?
Well, I've told you.
So I'm leaving that up to you if you want to tell people. Let's just put it this way. It is one hell of a lot of supplements.
It's 23 times a day, basically.
23 times, 23 times a day. So you take 60 supplements per day. You should live to, if you don't live to 120, this is a failure.
Yeah, well, it's been a ruse, you know, from these nutritionist people. But part of it is that I'm only on like seven things, but you need five, like Spanish root, for example. I take 9 of those a day. And, you know, but it's only one thing.
Spanish root. See, in my culture, that's something Spanish you root. Smoke and something you get high on. That's not something.
Right. Yeah. So I'm a pill popper for sure.
So what do you think is the difference between 50 years ago and today? Do you think it has to do? I'm sure it has to do with we're much more health conscious. We're eating much better. You know, the old American diet of bacon and eggs for breakfast and, you know, 3 starch meals per day with canned vegetables and, you know, all these unhealthy things. And exercise was not important. Exercise is important today. So I think there's physically some things we are doing differently. But I think there's something mental, there's a mental difference now than there was 50 years ago. Do you feel that?
Well, mainly I do, but I really think it is because of those reasons. In other words, I think if you were eating poorly at our age, not eating, you know, fresh meals, vegetables, salads, protein shakes, you know, if I ate the way my grandfathers ate, I'd probably feel like crap. And, you know, I probably have, in fact, I have an uncle who ate everything he could in front of him. You know, we're Italian, and he would eat all the antipasta and salami sandwiches. He'd drink, he'd smoke, and, you know, and he died at 66 years old. So, and guess what? He didn't feel healthy for probably 20 years of that 66 years.
Oh, that's a shame.
A lot of it was his diet and lack of exercise. And so I think we feel better and we feel younger because, you know, I'm eating healthier than I ate when I was a teenager, for sure. I mean, I don't go to fast food, and I exercise 4 to 5 times a week.
And what is your exercise, you know, apart from walking? Do you do? You're not a gym person, right?
No, I'm not.
So walking is your primary exercise.
Yeah, I mean, and it's walking, running, that type of thing. Mainly walking, but you got to get your heart rate up. So I'll run for a minute or two or three or whatever, and then stop, and then do it again, and so on. But I also bought a power plate, which is this thing that vibrates. You stand on it. And apparently it's really good for you, and you lay on it, and you can lay on parts of your body, and the thing vibrates very intensely. And I guess that's really good for the system. And it has pulleys attached to it, so I can do upper body as well as lower body. So I do that probably 3 times a week at least.
Let me tell you where my mind goes, and this is going to give you an idea, give our audience an idea of the difference between the two of us. That sounds like a dominatrix submissive toy. that doesn't sound like an exercise piece.
Oh no, you'd love it, Charlie. Just that, you know, it vibrates your entire body if you just stand on it, and it's supposed to intensify your workouts 10x. So 5 minutes on that is like 50 minutes.
Oh, I'm going to have to look into it. We'll talk about that the next time we get together. I want to know more about that. You know what I want to do is I want to give a very brief synopsis of what I consider the seasons of life and why I think you and I are in what I call the golden years, and it's the making most of the years that matter most, because I think we are in the stage of life of the years that matter most, and I call it the seasons of life. There are 4 seasons, and I will describe these briefly. Life begins at 20. Before 20 is just all who knows, but at 20 is your spring season. This is your season of planting seeds, and this is a, for you, it was a quick season because you started working as a teenager. It was a quick season. By your mid-20s, you had figured out what you wanted to do. But many people, it takes longer. So it's a 10-year, say, to 30, 35. Then after that comes your summer season, and this is your highly productive season. And this is 30 to 35 to now, today, 50 to 60, 55, 60, maybe 65. But then there's this season that people ignore, and it's the autumn, and that is the season between, say, 65 and 80. And this is the beautiful season. If you think of autumn is a season where things slow down. The colors, you know, you think of the Northeast and Maine and Massachusetts, and you think of the colors of the leaves and how beautiful they are. And this is a time for enjoying life, to really, you know, you've worked hard during your summer season. Did I miss the summer season? Did I skip the summer season?
No, you did.
I did skip the summer season, that this is your highly productive years. Now you're taking advantage of your productive years, and these are the years that we hit on. And then after that you and I are at right now, and then after that is when you become, we're in old age, and this is when you hit old age. And I believe that this time of life is a time where you really spend doing what's most important in life, in your personal life. Now, you and I have spent quite a bit of time talking about what your life might look like after 70. Can you tell us, since you are entering your autumn season and you're taking it very seriously, you've made sort of your mission statement, your activities, what things you're going to be involved in, what things you're not going to be involved in. Would you care to share some of the goals of your life post 70? Because that was the year that you told me you wanted to make a change in your life, you wanted to do something different, what would your goals look like at 70 as opposed to what they were at 55?
Oh, yeah, dramatically different. You know, at 55, I wanted to grow the company, both the equity side and the brokerage side. And but the interesting thing is a lot of men and women our age, when they retire from the company or whatever they're doing, they go into oftentimes nonprofit mode, and they get involved in something that's near and dear to their heart. And when I look back, I'm going, I started that at about 35 years old, being on the board of my kids' grade school and then being on the board of my kids' high school, as well as the president of it. And then I got involved in the real estate board of the Diocese of Orange, and then on the Boy Scouts and a company called Higher Ground, a nonprofit, and RAD, and, you know, I'm missing three or four.
Yeah, you had like nine charities that you were involved with.
Right.
It was an extraordinary number of charities that you were involved with.
Right. So giving back, I feel I've done it. And so my plan was after 70 to get off every board. I think I was going to stay on two or three. One would be involved in Wells of Life, and the other one as the chairman of the facility corp that owns the Christ Cathedral, because that was partially my baby in acquiring that. And so I, you know, it's fun. I don't mind doing it. It's four times a year. There's specific challenges that come up that, but I understand how to fix those problems because they're typically real estate problems. So, but the balance of the time I want to spend with my grandkids, being able to attend their events and travel. But yet I've been to 102 countries, and I've been to Maui once a year at the very least every year since 1990. And I was on the board there of the Marriott 11 years. I was going twice a year. And so, so we have a lot of family experiences traveling, and I would call them, we have educational trips and then we have vacations. And as you know, Charlie, Rosemary and I just got back from an educational trip. We went to Morocco, and we'd never been there. And that's part of what I want to do now from 70 and beyond is go probably till 80, because then I think after 80, it gets a little more challenging to do these trips. But places I've never been, I mean, that is just kind of what I like to do. And as I talked to you earlier today about, it would be kind of fun, and Rosemary and I talked about it, and we were in London recently for one of the premieres of Top Gun, and Rosemary said to me, why don't we just rent a VRBO and stay here for a month and just, you know, soak up the culture of London? And I was like, that would be a lot of fun. So part of the bucket list is to do that, and you just did that in Lisbon, and I know you loved it. And so, you know, part of me wants to travel everywhere, but part of me wants to get immersed in other people's cultures, because I never did that. I grew up in Monterey Park, moved to San Marino early on in our marriage. Then we moved to Orange County, and that's it. I mean, it would take me right now about an hour to get back to Pasadena, where I was born. So I'm not one of those. I haven't been out in the world other than traveling. So I like that. I like the fact that I haven't really had to move around for work, and that the only time I leave Orange County is to travel to unique and fun places. And so that's how I want to spend it. And I got to tell you, we're going on a trip to Oberammergau for the Passion Play in September. It's going on all year. They only do it every 10 years.
Now, you're a guide at that, aren't you?
What?
Aren't you a guide or a participant? I mean, a leader in that process?
No, that's the Order of Malta Lord's trip you're thinking of.
Oh, okay.
And that's one of them I didn't think about. But no, this is just a special trip that happens every 10 years. Well, the couple that invited us, the gentleman's 83 years old. And so, you know, what I do is I'll pick mentors. Even at age 67, I'm picking mentors. Like, I want to be, I'll mention his name, Tim Strader. A lot of people know him in the county. And he's got more energy than I've ever seen out of an 83-year-old. And, you know, I want to be like him at 83. And his wife is, she's a little younger than him, but she's in her late 70s, I'm sure. You know, they both constantly travel. I've been in a CEO group with him for years, and there's a couple other people in that group, and they're the same way. And I really got this from them. And only I started earlier in age than they did. And so so there's hope, basically, Charlie, that we could be doing this probably till we're, I would say, 85. And I hope that's the case, because as you talked about earlier in the day when you and I had a chat, just physically it gets difficult to, with the long plane rides, and if planes get canceled, and the distance just between one terminal to the other when you have to switch a plane in Europe or Africa or wherever you are. I mean, it's okay now, but 15 years from now, I might think a little differently of that.
Yeah, so you're gonna pack a lot lighter, that's for sure.
Yes, yes. And, you know, as you know, we have a place in Chicago and downtown, and Rosemary and I are immersed in the culture of downtown Chicago, and we love it. We go there. It's great because we have no commitments. I don't think we've cooked once, I think, in the kitchen, and we just remodeled it too. Cracks me up. But we don't use it, and we go out to dinner every night, and we watch movies, and we do, you know, and there's very little distraction. So so that is the autumn years. And I think it keeps you younger. You know, the more activity and things that you do, I think mentally, certainly, and maybe even physically, it keeps you in the game.
Yeah, I think you've got to keep mentally stimulated. I really do like your idea of having a cross between in your travels, because we're very similar in our joy of travels, is that there is a time for learning and education and finding more about, but there's a time for enculturation. And that was my time in Portugal this time. And, you know, I went a week, a full week, where I was at in Portugal, in Lisbon. I was in a non-touristy section. I was only less than a mile from the tourist. It was not that far. You know, it was certainly walking distance, except Lisbon has hills, so it's Uber up and it's walking back.
Yeah.
I went almost 1 week without having an English conversation in English, because people just in Portugal don't speak that much English, and so, you know, you can you know, it's kind of converse, you know, you can order food in a grocery store and you can ask different questions and people can show you which is the non-fat milk and which is the fat milk, and you know you can get a couple of things there, because I eat breakfasts, but that's all. My refrigerator had two things in it. It had milk, it had water, and then I had granola and bran flakes, and then there was a place for homemade ice cream, and I would buy a liter of homemade ice cream. I always had in my refrigerator a full liter of homemade ice cream. That's why I gained weight on this trip. But there is something about that enculturation where you're forced to face yourself. You're not distracted, mm-hmm. and you have to think about important things in your own life.
Yeah, that's so true, and it gives you the time to do that.
Yeah,
as opposed to when you're running around with your, like a chicken with your head off, you're able to really sit there and think about, you know, the meaning of life and what you want out of it, and, you know, it's limited at that point. And I think about it often, actually. I know that I've only got, you know, 15, maybe 20 years left of quality of life.
I know. The reality is there, and you know the terrifying thing, I don't know if it's terrifying, but the troubling thing is we don't even know we have that, because we could have something we're not even expecting. So it makes mindfulness and being present minded and enjoying the present. That's why I love how committed you are to your family. You have, what do you have, 25 birthdays a year or something like that?
24 immediate family, yeah, 24, And then we take care of a few old ladies that we, you know, celebrate.
You take care of so many people. You know, I'm reading. I read something in Wikipedia, and we'll kind of wrap up with this. I read something in Wikipedia that was really shocking to me, at least. And the baby boomers, you know, have been, you know, the dominating culture in America for so long, but now, you know, it's the millennials, and I'm not sure what you call the people before the millennial or that precede the millennials.
Generation X.
No, it's the one that, what is my son a part of at 30 years old?
Generation X.
They're the ones that are running the country, but and the baby boomers, except for when you get to presidents and speakers of the House and people that should be doing something else other than running a country, because at 80 years old, you got no business, in my opinion, doing it. But we are entering this period, this time of baby boomers in America, when vastly increasing numbers of baby boomers will be hitting the retirement age of 65. I read this in, you know, I looked up the encyclopedia called Wikipedia, and Wikipedia told me this, that from today until 2030, 10,000 baby boomers each day will hit retirement at age 65. 10,000 per day will hit 65. What advice might you offer people hitting this phase and, you know, going through what I went through? That it doesn't sound like you will do it, but I went through sort of this transition of being very busy, very useful, very productive, to where I felt useless and bored and unproductive. What advice would you give to people feeling that way?
Go grab your passion and do it. I mean, mine's travel. I want to explore and do things. And, you know, there's got to be something that really makes them happy. It could be art, you know, going down in the basement and being an artist, and just things that you would do if you didn't have to work. In other words, is everyone, you know, if you ask that question to anybody, okay, if you didn't have to work, you had all the money in the world you needed, what would you do? But like you said, a lot of people, they don't know. So, I mean, my suggestion is that you need to sit and think about it, because many of the retirees, it's probably only the top 10% or 20%, they have more money than they need in retirement. They don't do anything with their time. They now have more time and money than they've ever had in their life.
Oh,
and
how many people are going to die with a ton of money? You know, I want to die. I have said, not only do I want to die broke, I want to die owing money.
Oh my God!
Because my son's in a position that he doesn't need it. He'll be fine.
Right.
He'll be fine without that. You know, you and I went through a process where we wrote sort of a mission statement, and we took a look at things that you're doing. You impressed me, Rand. You were very dedicated to this process. You didn't just say, let's go out for lunch and have a 90-minute lunch and talk about it. I mean, we spent several weeks working on it, and I don't know how helpful you found it, but it really seemed to me to give you a lot of clarity about what's important to you in the next phase of your life.
Yeah, I highly recommend everyone our age do that. I think they're missing something by not self-examining where do they want to go. They know how much time and money they have and what they can do. And I have to tell you, I've got, and I won't mention the name, but I've got a partner client who's 74 years old, and he's got, you know, liquid cash in the bank of $30 million. He's probably worth $130 million, but he is scrapping for every penny, and he doesn't travel. He goes into the office. He's, you know, and he counts his money basically. And then he got colon cancer, I believe, and he's beat it, which is really good. But I thought that would be a wake up call, but
it's not.
But he's one of so many over my life. I've met with people to try to list their properties, and they're wealthy people. They've got more money than they'll ever need, and yet they haven't figured out what to do with the rest of their life. They keep doing the same thing till they drop dead. And I'm sad for them. I think they need to meet you, Charlie, and sit down with you and like you did with me, and walk through that and figure out the next chapter.
Yeah, you do need to do that, and I am available for people that want to do that. You know, I'm thinking, we have been raised in America on the concept of saving, how important it is, and then people who have spent their entire life saving have no history, no experience with spending. All they know how to do is save, and so spending, they feel like they're depreciating all that they've worked for, and yet you've worked this hard so you can spend it. That's the reason you've worked this hard, so you can spend it. So spend it, for crying out loud. Well, I'll tell you, Ransberry, it's such a treat. Oh, you have something else you want to say? So before I close it up,
I was just going to say, you know, before you get to our age, you do have to work and save to get to this point. You know, with me with six children, I mean, they were in private schools, and then I had really nice weddings for all of them. But once that's over, then whatever's left is yours to spend, right?
There you go.
And enjoy.
There you go. Ransberry, it's always such a treat to have you a guest on the show. You're such a firm, fun person to chat with. I mean, I know you and I, we have our breakfasts and we schedule them for an hour, and we're always in trouble because we never do it in an hour.
No, never.
Thank you for spending taking time. I know you've got a demanding schedule today, and I want to honor your time and get you on to doing what you're doing. So thanks so much for coming on the show with me today.
All right. Thank you for having me, Charlie.
My pleasure.
It's fun.
Well, that's it for today. And until next, everybody, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.